All right, everyone, welcome to Top Secret News Radio Show. I'm your host, Christina George, along with my co-host, Renee Chavez. Renee, you there?
I am here absolutely live and in person. Really in person. Really, right here.
Really?
Really.
Live in person. What do you know?
For
well, I'm live in spirit. How about that?
Wow. You're already on the other side and you're doing a show from
there. I
wow.
feel like it. I'm one step away. I'm in the dang hospital, so I got one foot in and one foot out.
Well, at least you get applesauce or whatever that stuff you're eating. And, you know.
No, you mean baby pee puree.
Baby poop.
Taco, whatever. That's the worst best looking stuff ever. That would make you not want to eat and be sick to your stomach for sure.
Oh, God.
Well, again, welcome everyone to the show. We are glad that you are here. You know, it was interesting because I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to see the show with how I'd been feeling, but just happened that Renee and I were able to throw everything together, and I think that we've come up with a show that everybody will be happy with. There's so many things going on right now in top trending news. We have all kinds of stuff to choose from, so...
Yeah, you know, there's been so many things that sometimes can slip underneath the radar sometimes, so sometimes when you find these things just kind of there, and like, oh, wow, that's... I never saw that before, so perfect for a show like this. And, you know, I do want to, you know, make mention, too, about, you know, everybody's, a lot of people are concerned about what's going out there in Standing Rock, and they're trying to move things out of the floodplain and so forth. And so now they got this, not evacuation, but they're being evicted. So they got to be pushed back all the way to the cap now. And so they only got till the 21st to get everything in order, or also going to start arresting people and stuff. So it's like, wow.
Well, I'm sorry. At this point, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, but,
yeah.
You know, you've got flooding and, you know, people, they're putting their own lives at stake now, you know, on a whole nother level for something, you know, that could be really, really bad. We're seeing the flooding here in California, in Northern California, and what it could do. I mean, it is absolutely devastated the areas all around us. So, you know, I absolutely, although I stand behind people of Standing Rock and what it stands for, I do stand behind the government of saying, you got to move people out of there, you know, especially with all the flooding, because, you know, to do it for, you know, principle isn't worth losing people's lives over. I'm sorry, it's just not.
Yeah, so it's just saying where they are right now, so they're just kind of, you know, have to get everything moved out of the way, and plus to, you know, continue with the cleanup, too, from the group of people that they've had there, you know, thousands of people around there they had before, so they're just kind of cleaning up that mess, too, so a lot of work to be done there.
You see all the people that go up there, you know, to do this, and then they leave all the trash and stuff behind, and the mess, and other people are still having to try to clean it up, because, you know, that's the same kind of thing that happened up there at, at Maha Ranch. Up in Oregon, when all that with Bundy's and everything happened,
right?
You know, they occupied that, and then they tried to charge everybody that was arrested with how the grounds were kept or unkept. So it's kind of crazy how that happens. I mean, when we're out there, you know, trying to protest together, we need to.
And that's the thing. That happens at every protest, that, you know, some kind of trash is left behind, and when they're trying to make a statement, you know. And then when they do stuff like this...
Without wanting to save their land and to keep it clean and everything and all the different, you know, you don't want it contaminated, but you look at what's happening.
And that's the thing, too, because that's important, you know, all you listeners out there, you know, when you go to, you know, places like that, especially when you're worried about the environment, you know, when you do leave, take your crap with you. I mean, you know, help keep it clean, you know, just like going to... You know, a lot of times when you go to the movies and, you know, kind of take your trash out to the can and, you know, dump it on your way out. You know, it's just that kind of thing. You know, it's
and how many people do we see that get up and leave their stuff in a cup holder and everything?
Right.
Even though the trash cans run on their way out.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
You know,
absolutely.
It's not that hard of a thing to do. You know, when you pick up your stuff, you know, you brought the stuff, you put it all there, you made your campsite, and you stayed there for days on out, and then all of a sudden, you know, it got too cold, and they just take up and leave and just left the stuff there. And so that's just totally wrong, you know, and that left the tribe to have to try to clean it up. And, of course, the, you know, Army Corps of Engineers is pressuring them to, hey, you guys got to clean it up because we're going to start opening up the weirs and everything else to let the, you know, the waters out, you know, because once the thing starts thawing out. So it just puts a lot of pressure.
Yeah, and when you open these weirs, you know, it's no joke. They've got to release, you know, the overflow of the the flooding areas so that, you know, they can stay there, other areas. But, again, wanting to stay there, I mean, that would be like, you know, out here in Oroville, you know, for the people who are flooded. I mean, there's a lot of people who didn't want to leave there either. They didn't want to leave their houses because they were fear of it being destroyed. But, you know, they had to do mandatory evacuations. I mean, people, no matter, I get and I understand and stand behind the values and the premise of what you guys are doing. But, again, when you're talking about flooding and you talk about all these things, you've got to think about the people's safety first.
Yeah.
Because we already know that Bureau of the Land, they're going to go forward with this stuff, no matter what. They're going to go forward with what has to be done, and whether people, you know, comply or not. And we don't want to see, you know, people end up losing lives or, you know, having any kind of problems like that.
Yeah, so they got a lot of cleanup though. It's pretty bad out there, and I feel bad for everybody out there. But you know, it's like what can you do? I mean, all we can do is keep it under our prayers and pray everybody keep safe and try to, you know, preserve what they have. You know, so
right. And for those that are still out there, you know, I mean, there's still a lot of people out there. They just need to band together and do whatever they can to get this stuff, you know, cleaned up and get out of there before they open this weir, because, again, once they start doing these things and the flooding starts, there's not going to be any time.
Yeah.
You know, to think about this and want to do things differently.
You know, and they're, you know, trying to do this to fight against the pipeline and so forth, which I get. I totally get it. And, you know, there's other ways to try to, you know, if they wanted to protest, and of course they're having people take money out of the bank that supports the pipeline. So that's another form of way they're going to protest that too, you know. But, you know, we're fighting against the rich now, so that's the other thing too that makes it really difficult to fight against something like that. You know,
unless somebody
just magically says, we're using alternative fuels, we're using alternative power. You know, until somebody actually just does it and make it happen, then we won't have to rely on, so you know, on all these, you know, these fossil fuels. But, you know,
right.
It's easier said than done.
Absolutely. Well, I guess we will start with the show. I want to start, and this is one of the articles that you pulled up this morning, and it was about the strange pulses that are being detected across the U.S. The other day, on Valentine's Day, actually. So if you want, why don't you go ahead and...
In fact, Lynn pointed that out to me, one of our listeners, and she, you know, she wanted to know if I, you know, picked up anything about that. And there were some strange incidences, you know, that I've talked to you about earlier when we were, you know, talking earlier before the show about, you know, animals were doing some pretty strange things for the past few days. And it seemed like if it's anything connected to these pulses causing the migration to change, that affects their navigation, you know, like the birds. I was watching these geese flying north. I started hearing them out my window. They were like really loud, and it was like, so I was going to go check it out and watch them flying. But they were flying north. You know, you'd think that they would have flown north, you know, a couple months before. But now that we're just deep into the season, seeing them flying north, and then all of a sudden, they kind of almost stop, and then they started going like counterclockwise in a circle, and they were just kind of stuck there for about a good 5 to 10 minutes. And then finally they continued to move north. And again at the same time yesterday, another group of them came, did the exact same thing. Same spot. There's like, is there like a little magnetic force going on here that's causing them to lose direction and they're just kind of gain, you know, their bearings again so they can navigate back north? So what these pulses that are going on right now, it's definitely having an unusual effect, because even the USGS is also picking up these disturbances, and there's a gentleman that shows the different wavelengths from different parts of the country, showing that it is traveling, and there's like a little signature that you can see this pulse moving across the country. So I thought that was, I don't know, it's puzzling. It's puzzling. I don't know exactly where it's from, but it started from the east, moving west.
Well, and they're saying that the seismograms, you know, are showing this strange traveling pulses,
mm-hmm.
and they're not sure what the origins are. It's just the pulses are traveling 3 times faster than the seismic P waves, something like 26,800 meters per second. You know, they're saying, could it be a Russian spy ship, pole ship? You know, like, nobody really knows. But it's interesting because, if you remember, like, the last week or so, I kept getting these strange headaches, and I kept mm-hmm. getting that I was felt like I was being hit by, like, waves of energy. And
yeah.
I posted about it a few times. Like, it just kind of, it would come and go. And then, of course, this article comes out. So it's interesting to kind of think of what's going on. I mean, there's so many theories. I mean, some people are saying it's Planet X or Nibiru, whatever you want to call it, that is about to make itself, you know, present, all these different
right.
kinds of things. I mean, but nobody can seem to put their finger on
what it's
exactly
amazing,
it could
be. Because, Lynn just posted in chat, too, that in Norristown, posted that there was a Russian ship close to us. I think it was like 300 miles away from our coast, our eastern coast. So, you know, again, there's this kind of thing that's going on with Russia, and it's not the first time we dealt with something unusual with Russia like that, too, especially in the times we're living in, this whole Cold War thing that we're going through again. So, what was it that the ship that may have been out there sending out pulses, trying something new to interfere? That could be. Or is it HAARP again? So there's a lot of things that are you know, left everything open. That's just another one of the mysteries that, you know, I like looking into. So definitely, we'll definitely be checking that as well.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, we're having these, they're hearing strange noises and frequencies coming from space. All of a sudden, we're hearing more of the sounds coming from our sky, like we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're seeing all these, what seems to be electromagnetic changes and sources coming from different things. It's very interesting to wonder what is causing all of this. I mean, it's like, you know, our grid of a world is on the fritz or something.
You know, and we started thinking about, you know, with all the things that they're doing, even with CERN, is that causing an effect of things? And you know, we also had a solar eclipse last week with a comet, and all these other things are taking place. And didn't you mention something, too, that there was also all of a sudden there's a spiral galaxy that just happened to just appear all of a sudden? You know, so again, there's something really strange about that. You know, how does it actually just suddenly appear? And when we started talking about CERN, what is it actually opening? Is it causing things to either speed up time to cause it to actually suddenly move closer? Because we know that Andromeda is also moving this direction. You know, so all these other things that are going on, you got to really look at all the, you know, the usual suspects as well as the unusual suspects and try to put this thing together, you know, because it seems like a lot of things are starting to happen since they've really been
right.
using CERN. And now we got two of them, one in China, too. So.
Right. Absolutely. And we've always said, I mean, it's like, you know, a big, gigantic Ouija board. You know, you open the portal and who knows what's going to come through, you know, so it's very interesting. But, you know, you were talking about the galaxy, and it was something you and I were speaking about off air earlier today, and it's a giant galaxy orbiting our own planet. It just appeared out of nowhere. And they say astronomers were scanning the skies, just got a huge surprise. They discovered a gigantic galaxy orbiting our own, where none had been seen before. It just came out of nowhere. So just how did the recently discovered Crater 2 succeed to pull this off? Like a deer jumping out from the interstellar bushes and to suddenly shock us. Even though the appearance may seem sudden, the Crater 2 has always been there all along. We just never saw it. The Crater 2 is a dwarf galaxy, satellite of the Milky Way. Crater 2 was only discovered back in 2016, which may seem surprising because this galaxy is relatively close to us, and it has considerable dimensions, being the fourth largest satellite galaxy in the Milky Way. But the Crater 2 is located approximately 380,000 light years from us and has an estimated diameter of an order of 7,000 light years. And this galaxy is in the direction of the constellation Crater. So our galaxy, the Milky Way, has some of the satellite galaxies as well, with Crater 2 being the fourth largest, as previously reported. And given the proximity and dimensions of Crater 2, how could this have gone undetected for so long? And one of the main reasons has to do with the fact that this galaxy is very dark. Its brightest is very, very weak. So it's called a diffuse galaxy.
So that's
again,
interesting.
How crazy for them to say it's always been there, yet they just found out about it in 2016. You know, it's kind of hard to put those two things together.
Mm-hmm. You know, how many
times... How do we know it's always been there?
You know, and that's the thing. We've been talking about this ever since we started doing the show, even before talking about this, doing the show, is, you know, we have... You know, we talk about comets and asteroids and so forth, and all of a sudden, we just had a near miss. You know, how did you miss that? And now you got a galaxy. It's a lot bigger than the rocks and ice that we see that we just happen to just miss. Like, whoa. But now we got a galaxy. And,
right.
You know, like, oh.
A huge galaxy at that.
We're surprised. I mean, that's like, comparing a little tricycle to a semi truck, and like wait a minute, that's a lot bigger. How do you miss that?
Well, just always cracks me up. You know, scientists can say things don't exist, and then all of a sudden they pull it out their ass, and it's just like, oops, they pull it out their rear end and say, oh, by the way, you know, we've got this galaxy and it's been here forever, but although we just found it. It's been there forever. Just take our word for it, people. Just take our word for it. We would never lie to you. Say
the
last word.
I believe that just as much as the military said that there was no Area 51. Oh, wait a minute. There is Area 51.
Oh,
sorry. Yeah. You know, there is, but...
Tell me the secrets, Renee.
They don't have, aliens.
Area 51. They told us there's no Area 51. We have to trust them.
Huh. Right.
That's a thing.
That's who the reptilian on the talk show. Oh, whoops.
You know?
No, the secret's out.
What can we say? Yeah, it just amazes me, the stuff that they come out with here every once in a while. But I want to talk about this next one, and it is really interesting to me. I kind of want to get people's take on it as well. For people who are listening, I know we were kind of having some issues with the phone lines tonight. But if you have questions and you want to try to call in, the area code is 504-273-7379. But let me pull up this next article. All right, so... bodies of a mythical creature were discovered in the basement of an abandoned mansion in the UK. So thousands of wood boxes with mythical creatures and bizarre artwork were found in the basement of a mysterious mansion in the UK. Thomas Theodore Marilyn was the former owner of the mansion. He was a crypto-naturalist and a xeno-archaeologist born in 1782 in Hillshire, North England. Other than his curious hobby of collecting remains of uncatalogued or rare species, he is remembered for his incredible lifespan of approximately 160 years. Okay, first of all, let's stop right there.
Okay.
160 years.
I posted the link, so there it is here. Okay.
160 years. Like, what has happened? Like, we're lucky if we get 100 years, but nowadays. But 160 years this man lived to be. That's crazy just in itself.
Mm-hmm.
It says, well, some of the specimens in his collection are clearly the product of human ingenuity. There are also others that puzzle even the most skeptical of minds. Sketches and illustrations show that a thorough analysis had been performed on these fabled beings, but it also points out to possible blueprints that served as a standpoint for creation. So in any case, the bizarre collection is sure to raise questions. It cannot be dismissed as a forgery, nor as pure artistic concept, so if proven to be true, it could challenge numerous notions impossible to our modern culture. Is it possible that such fabled creatures existed in a not-so-far-away past? If so, why would such an alternative reality be concealed from us? Well, we know why. I mean, they don't want us to know this kind of stuff. But Renee will post the link for the video in there. There's a link in there. But if you check these things out, they are quite interesting. There's one that looks like a little fairy, and I will tell you, it reminds me of the little fairy that was found years ago, and it went viral, and they were doing, like, the CAT scans of it.
Right.
And they saw that it had the full muscular buildup, but it was just this teeny tiny thing. It had these wings on it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you look at the little small one, that's what it reminds me of. And then it's got some bodies which look like mummified, possibly alien beings. Again, some really strange-looking stuff.
You know, again, you know, when you look at them and you compare them, you know, with the alien-looking one and the fairy, you know, there's a lot of interesting resemblance to all that when you think about it. So, you know, how connected are these things, you know, when we're dealing with things that were, you know, once upon a time thought it was too much of a myth to really believe, you know, how many people will actually say they actually believe in fairies and so forth, you know, about as much as people that believe in, you know, in aliens. So, again, when you start putting these puzzles together, that all these mysteries and that are out there is, there's a strong connection. Everything is totally connected, you know, even when we deal with spirits. So, again, it's all coming together. And if it hadn't been for this, our team and other teams like us and this show, you know, we're actually trying to put the puzzles together, how connected that they really are. It's hard to believe that they are. It's all still coming together.
And what were your thoughts when you saw these different pictures?
Well,
I'm gonna put the link to the actual original article. Hold on just a second. I'll put it in chat for everybody.
You got that one in there from the page itself? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got that one in there.
No, I'm not the one from Disclosed, but from the actual original.
Oh, okay.
Person
who's
got all the pictures and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And that has more close-ups of the actual fairy. And the wings seem to look like butterfly wings. You might want to check it out too, Renee. Very, very interesting how this thing looks.
Yeah. You know, again, you know, there's, you know, everybody talks about gnomes and stuff like that. You know, talk about you know, the elementals, as they kind of refer them to. You know, a lot of times you would think, hey, well, you know, such thing, you know, because basically that's what society teaches us. But then when we start finding things like this, you know, then you start really questioning, well, now I'm not sure. And now when you start looking more of it, more cases in various places are starting to come out with this. And then it throws that opens to more questions, so it gives you more reasons to look into it more deeply, to try to study this kind of subject and finding out that there's a lot more truth than there is to it as being so-called fairy tale.
Well, yeah, and, you know, again, here you've got this man who was a cryptozoologist, you know, back in the 1700s. I mean, how many people did you find that did that, you know? And they were saying that when he was 80 years of age, he only resembled a 40-year-old, which probably drew more attention to him than his actual collection of, you know, specimens, because how can you be 80 years old and you look like you're 40, and you live to be 160, you know? Could he possibly have some kind of alien DNA himself, you know, that brought him into all this? Who knows? But it's definitely interesting.
You know, we hear, we see stuff like this on, you know, TV series and movies. You know, what if there was a kind of relationship that they had with them, and they did something for them to be sustained longer? You know, sometimes you need to make certain deals, you know, in certain areas, you know, you're able to get extra years for whatever reason in exchange for, you know, preserving things. I don't know. Or preserving a history.
Again, something just seems different because, again, you know, how many people live to be 160 years old? How many people at 80 years old resemble somebody who looks like they're in their 40s? You know, things like that. And they say during his lifetime, Theodore embarked on a journey to the U.S. where he would make his unusual collection known to a wider audience. He received much attention at first, but since his cryptids were so puzzling and the worldview was so narrow at the time, he was labeled as a fraud and was soon marginalized by other cryptozoologists and naturalists. While on his endeavor, he befriended several prominent mathematicians and biologists who were intrigued by his work and also approved some of his concepts in the fringe physics and chemistry. Theodore's diaries were found together with the specimens contained esoteric notions of quantum mechanics, a concept that is yet to be established at the point in time where the papers were written. Because of this, they were also strengthened by his friends to publish a study on the possibility of time travel. And we're talking, again, late 1700s. As with most paradigm-threatening individuals, Theodore would soon fall into the dismay after he was accused of theft by another collector of rare specimens. His reputation went astray, and he was returned back to vagueness. From this point on, nothing was heard of about him anymore on the scientific community. That's until 1942, when a man pretending to be this man had donated a construction to an orphanage in London, where the sole desire was to never unseal the basement. The man looked no older than 45, and he was presumed to be a relative of Theodore. The last time anyone saw or heard anything of him. According to modern standards, the man couldn't have been the same person born in 1782, because that would make him 160 years of age, and while looking at a quarter of the number, his age of that number. However, the paperwork didn't mention an artifact derived or dubbed alabaster, which was an unusual anti-aging properties. We hear about that a lot even now in lotions and stuff for wrinkles and stuff. So since it hadn't been discovered along with this collection, we can presume that Theodore never let it out of his grasp. Is it possible that he discovered the elixir of youth? And what about his mysterious legacy? While some specimens are clearly the product of human ingenuity, there are others that intrigue even the most skeptical of minds. Sketches and illustrations reveal a thorough analysis has been performed. Oh, I already read that part. And so again, you know, are these fabled creatures? Are they real? And if you look at, you know, the boxes that they have them in, I mean, the way that they preserve them, I mean, again, there's just so many interesting things. And again, that elixir, you know, that could be how he stayed looking so young. Who knows? Maybe he did find that secret. But again, to have a those kinds of a collection. And then, you know, when this mysterious place is, you know, offered to the callers, you know, the only thing is that they will not open the basement. Well, obviously that didn't work so well because they got all this stuff and they found it all. But just imagine being the person who finds all this, makes this find. I mean, this is a find of a lifetime.
Yeah, it is.
So we're definitely going to keep an eye on that because I'm sure that there'll be more coming as time goes on about these things.
Wow, that is so amazing, though. I would like to check it out myself personally, but, you know, I'm way over here and there, way over there.
Yeah, you know. Well, something, this really isn't anything top secret, but it was absolutely kind of crazy, if nothing else. So there's been this new mutant fish species that has been found. And, Renee, you can put it in there. Renee and I were talking while we were on the phone earlier, getting ready to put the show together. And I came across this article about this exact subject, which is how we got it. And when I see the pictures of this thing, it'll blow your mind. We'll put the chat room. Well, also, all of these articles, I will put them up on our Top Secret News webpage after the show, so you'll be able to check them out all for yourself if you're interested. So, this guy spots a mutant creature with enormous jagged teeth. So just when we think we've seen all matters of species inhabiting the world, something surprising and bizarre pops out of nowhere. We know for a fact from all these millions of years the world has existed, countless species are lost and forgotten by nature, and we will never see those again. But there's also speculation that with many ancient creatures that could be simply hiding in the shadows, some of the places that definitely houses thousands of unknown species that are the deepest parts of our oceans. And the depths are dark and mysterious, so we can expect anything from grotesque sea monsters to colossal krakens or a megalodon, I'm sure, is down there. That's just a given, I think. Or some kind of like crazy, gigantic alligator or something. I mean, I just know that they're down there. But recently, a man in the Ukraine... True, yeah, very true. Recently, a man in the Ukraine filmed that what appeared to be a mutant reptilian creature. And why does it always have to be reptilian? That's what makes me laugh. I always have to be a mutant reptilian whenever it's something strange. And they found it lurking in the Petrolid River. And some suspect it to be a mutant created from the exposed radiation of Chernobyl. But I will tell you, this thing... I don't know. At first, I didn't even know what it was. It looked like, you know, like some mud, bunch of cracked mud with some rocks in it or something until this guy pokes it with a stick and the stupid thing moves and then lurks back into the shadows. But this thing has teeth. I mean, I know we've talked about teeth on, like, the red-bellied pacus. They have, like, human-like teeth, like a big old set of dentures in a fish's mouth. This is like a red-bellied pacu that needs braces badly. Because this poor fish's teeth are jacked up. But I would definitely think they could do some damage, if nothing else. And,
you know, I don't know. I look at it. And the teeth looks, I mean, they do look really bad. I posted it in there for you folks to look at it, so it's in the chat. I don't know, it just has this, I don't know, it looks like a really badly drawn cartoon, but it's real though. It just looks really bad.
Well, and again, it wouldn't surprise me that this is somehow affected by the Chernobyl radioactive waste, because we're seeing the same kind of craziness happen, you know, on the West Coast and stuff from Fukushima.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you start getting toxic waste, and mixing with our wildlife and our oceans and streams and things like that, you're going to have, we've seen everything from, you know, fish with their brains, you know, growing outside their skulls, I mean, or not their skulls, but outside of their body. We're seeing tumors on them. We're seeing them mutate and be deformed. Just craziness. But this fish is definitely something. Like, what did you think when you saw this fish? Like, could you imagine if you, like, first of all, seeing that, I don't know that I would have immediately picked it out as a fish or anything. Well, first of all, I wouldn't even be in the damn water. So Christina wouldn't be seeing any of that stuff.
If I was
a brave woman, or I could push Renee in front, I'd say, oh, check it out, Renee. What do you think? Like, can you imagine, like, I could see him, like, being kind of wondering what it is, and then he gets, you know, a pole or something, and he goes and touches it, and then it, like, retreats. Like, oh, my God, I would have a heart attack right then.
Yeah, it looks like it has, I don't know, it has a little bit like a alligator almost, but at the same time, the teeth are, because it looks like it has...
That would even be bad for an alligator.
Bad buck teeth shark or something.
Bark shark, buck teeth. See, that's in time.
God, don't test me.
Yeah, that might come out also bad.
Yeah, and, you know, this is a family show, right? So I want to, you know...
Yeah. Might get the FCC might get a little mad with that one.
Yeah. I'm not going to name that fish, I'm sorry. But I'll let you guys name it, so you, because you're not on the air, you're just listening. So it's inside the chat for y'all to take a peek at. But
I'm going to have to post this up, and we're going to let the listeners name what they think the fish should be called. All right, so everybody's listening tonight. Later on after the show, give me a little while so I can put all these up on the website or onto the page. But go to the Top Secret News Facebook page, and there you'll be able to see the video with the actual fish. And you guys tell me what you think would be a good name for this thing. I don't even know where to start. That thing is crazy.
You know, I don't think you know, all these biologists and out there would ever want me to name a new animal or new species out there, because if I'll say it's just how they look.
Oh, yeah, well, that could be oh so bad.
Leave it to me. I would just totally give it a totally crazy name, exactly how they look, and there you go. The name will stick. And they'll get a lot of kids in trouble because they called the name by its bad name fish there. Yeah.
Bad name fish.
Bad name fish.
And looks like we got somebody new in our chat room that just downloaded. So I just downloaded Pal Talk for Mac to listen to Christina George. Well, nice to have you. And that is Harry Paris Chameleon. All right, well, welcome to the show. Glad you're with us. Hope you enjoy the show tonight. But, yeah, so, again, that thing is crazy as hell. I don't even know what to think about that thing. Definitely need some braces or something. Could you imagine the bad breath on that thing?
You know, and people wonder about, you know, you think kissing a frog will be bad. You know, kissing that thing, whoa. That means you're not going to have no lips after that. Just saying.
You know? And as we're talking about Fukushima and things like that, I guess we got enough time to go over this. But so now scientists are believing that possibly the Fukushima reactors were built near a stargate. Now that's, people I'm sure probably say, what? How in the world could that possibly be? But, again, you know, this, it seems like there's a never-ending amount of interesting news that we can come up
yeah.
with.
I got the link.
Okay, and Renee will get it into chat for us. I'm pulling it up right now.
There we go. There's the link.
All right. So, a precise 3D data on a tomb containing an ancient mural that's situated about 3 kilometers from the wrecked Fukushima 1 nuclear power plant is now being collected on February 9th and 10th. The Fukushima Daiichi nuclear accident was a nuclear disaster at Fukushima 1 nuclear power plant on March 11, 2011, caused by the melting of 3 of the plant's 6 nuclear reactors. Now, archaeologists have discovered a painting on a tomb that depicts a stargate with a gigantic figure emerging from this portal. These quote-unquote doors that essentially communicate with us on other frequency bands have always existed on planet Earth. When we speak of frequency bands, we also speak of matter, and this matter will be in accordance with the field of reality, and that is being accessed. That is, it could also work in a universe or time matrix of a third dimension. The Stargate is a superconducting annual apparatus that allows travel through a subspace through a stable wormhole to another identical apparatus located at a great distance from the first one. Thus, the existence of the apparatus is described as a military secret. So, for those who have it, it's got a little video and people can check it out, but very interesting that they would find, you know, this kind of drawing on this tomb. It looks a lot like we would see back in the ancient tombs of Egypt or...
Can even look like Mesoamerican.
Yes, where we've seen other supposed stargates and... things like that, and it looks very, very similar to other things that I've seen when it's been in accordance to this. Like, you know, what were your thoughts? I mean, again, and this was recently discovered out in Japan at Fukushima. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard of any travel or Stargate stuff coming out of Japan, yeah, that I can remember.
That is interesting too, because we've talked about stargates and stuff like that in the Dragon's Triangle that's off the coast of Japan,
right.
Similar to the Bermuda Triangle. So I don't know. It just seems like it's pretty interesting too, because even underwater there's large pyramid structures down there and so forth. So again, that's leading to the mysteries of, you know, about Japan itself. Because it is that they have an ancient culture, they have an ancient belief too, so if there's any connection to why they believe in such a thing that they do, is there a connection to just being from the gate? We don't know. That is definitely worth researching more, because that caught my interest when he brought that up, and I'm like, wow. I'm just like looking at it sideways even. So,
right. Well, I'd also like to know what tomb this is.
Yeah.
What's behind the tomb? Are they planning on opening it? Are they planning on, how can you find something like this on the outside of the tomb and not access it? It's like,
it's the same thing in Egypt. They find these tombs, but everybody wants to go open it. Oh, well, you got to have permission of the government. You got to do this. You got to do that. Jump all these things, and a lot of times they're denied to even take a peek.
I don't want people knowing anything that we are putting out there. They want to keep it as secret as they can.
It's like, if it's a doorway, it's like, man, let me through. I want to try to go through. I want to explore the other side. May die trying, but,
you wouldn't, man. There's what's on the other side. Yeah, you can't just be running blindly, Renee. I keep trying to tell you that. You can't just be running out to the middle of nowhere, searching after things, and without being a little apprehensive.
Okay.
I know. That's like no fun for you. Renee's the one likes to dart off in the middle of the night, you know, into the middle of nowhere and not answer his phone, not answer his radio, just disappear and then pop back out somewhere like he's time traveling. Maybe he went through a portal.
I'm not
that on the other side. You're not telling.
I'm not telling.
You're going to keep that a secret, huh?
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that. We went out to a ranch. It was a well-known ranch where a serial killer had killed many of the workers, and we had gotten permission to go out there and investigate. And so we go out there, and so we park our cars, and we decide we're going to go and walk up the road and go up towards the levee. And so we start going, and everybody kind of all of a sudden got separated. And then all of a sudden I hear, "Christina, where are you?" And I'm like, it was my co-founder and the rest of our group. And I'm like, "I'm up with some of the other people up on the levee. Why? Where are you at?" And she goes, "Somebody's coming." I'm like, "Where are you at?" She goes, "I don't know. We all ran." I'm like, "What the hell are you running for? Like, now you're going to look like you're suspicious. We got permission to be here, dummy." I'm like, "I'm on my way." So here now, because they scatter like a bunch of cockroaches at looking suspicious, like we're not supposed to be there. You know, we've got security or the ranch hand security guy in his car going like 60 miles an hour up and down the rows of orchards looking for us. So I'm like trying to get a hold of Renee. Can't find Renee. Renee, who knows where Renee is. So we're trying to get back. So I finally get over there. I almost get run over by the dang ranch hand guy, and he's like, "Who are you? Where are you at?" And I told him, you know, that we were there and that we had permission. So he was like, "Okay, well, you know, I was wondering because everybody ran." I'm like, "Yes, and go ahead." I don't know why they ran either. And we're like still trying to get a hold of Renee, and then all of a sudden, he just kind of pops up out of nowhere. Like, "Where were you?" "Oh, no, I just kind of wandered off, and I don't know where I ended up." I'm like, "What? He cannot be doing that kind of stuff. He's notorious for that."
Yeah.
I got such a little leash on when we take you out.
Oh, wow.
we're gonna have to tie strings to each of our waists and be in a long line so nobody can go too far from us.
leave it to me. I'll throw some conga music with that, too. So there we go.
Exactly. We'll videotape it. That would be a great video.
It's something to keep track of our team when we're out investigating in the middle of nowhere. Got to make sure that we all know where each other's at, you know, all strung together.
Yeah, you don't need any high-gluten apps to, you know, GPS us. We just tie us all together and next best thing. But see, our group, like one person would go one way, the other person would go the other way, and we'd wrap like around a tree or something, so it probably wouldn't work out real well, but
that'll be a video for sure.
And I could see it happening. That's exactly why I'm saying this. Yeah, we laugh about it, but I'll tell you, our investigations are pretty hysterical, to say the least. I mean, when we have a case, it's all very professional and everything. But when we go out just to go investigate wherever, you know, just random places that we want to go check out, it's like you never know what may happen. We've had the craziest things happen. We were once at a mortuary, and this place had been shut down for 15 years, although it still had lights, and it still had a working phone. Yeah, think about that, guys. Think about that for a second.
You know, when you think of a place,
this place has been completely abandoned. Completely abandoned. Nothing
else. And locked up, and yes. We were invited.
Yeah, the door, like, literally opened on its own. It was unlocked, and that was one of the craziest things. And so we're in there, and I'm like, okay, you know, and I'm going to take a picture, you know, joking around. I'm going to take a picture on the phone because we were in the morgue or the embalming area. So I pick up the phone, and to my surprise, there's a dial tone on the other end. And I'm just like, what? You've got to be kidding. Whatever was there, they were definitely attracted to me that night because our equipment was going off the hook that night. And then if I left the room, then it stopped. If I came back, it start again. If I left, it would stop. It was definitely
It really liked you. It really did like you. It was following you everywhere. I would say that was probably one of our, you know, best one, because that place pretty much intrigued me, because there was so much mystery behind it, and it was pretty active. And then no sooner than you left the room, it got quiet. It was like,
overwhelming.
Yeah.
Crazy to that city that was there. And like, we went up to the chapel to go and take some pictures up in the top part of the, where the organ was, and the organ was still up there, and they still had pews in the
I was expecting that thing. To play. To be honest,
if that thing would have played, it'd have been a done deal. It'd be time to go.
You know, it kind of reminded me of that movie on the Ghost of Mr. Chicken thing. You know, Don Knotts kind of thing. You know.
I could see probably, you know, play some crazy, silly type of tune or something real creepy. Don, 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 don. Could you imagine sitting there and then all of a sudden that happening? Oh, my gosh.
Okay, then everybody would have ran out at the same time, too, the same way they ran from the ranch show. There we go.
So you and I would be standing there like, what the heck just happened? Everybody else would have ran out, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Positive, actually.
I'll be trying to get video of it, trying to get the cameras to work, trying to, you know, like...
Oh. Come on, Renee, come on, hurry up, get the camera.
Yep. Hey, nice, right? we're not like those ghost adventure guys. You know, on their first video, they all ran out of their... Oh, man.
All right, well, we're at the top of the hour, so we got to take a quick break. We will be right back. You're listening to Top Secret News with Renee Chavez and Christina George. Only on the UPRN Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're clear, Dust.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Top Secret News with your hosts, Christina George and Renee Chavez. So we're back for the second hour talking top trending alternative news stories, and we've covered quite a bit already so far. Good thing we... And a whole list of topics and what we're going to go through this
week. And we elaborated on some, too, so we did pretty good for the first hour.
Yeah, we have done pretty good. Well, I want to talk about, this is kind of an older news article, but it is one that has always intrigued me, and it is the case of Jean Hilliard, and she was the frozen... girl that was found frozen and ended up coming back to life, still alive and well today. Something she is basically a medical mystery to people.
I got the chat. I got the link, and I'll put it in there for right now. There it is.
So, literature brims with stories of medical marvels, most which tend to have perfectly reasonable and often mundane stories behind them. But some medical marvels are the real deal. One of these genuine medical miracles happens to be fantastical and truly astonishing is the story of Jean Hilliard. Now, she was actually on her route to a friend's house in the middle of the winter back in 1980. In the snowy state of Minnesota, when her car skidded off into an isolated gravel road. She was in the middle of nowhere, with no other vehicles. She had no choice but to try to brave the truck to her friend's house, which actually wasn't too far away. And she didn't have any cell phone, anything like that, because remember, that's back in the 80s, so...
Mm-hmm.
She made a valiant effort, but eventually the snow proved to be too much for her, and she collapsed on the ground a mere 16 feet from her friend's front door. Now, when her friend Nelson opened the door at 1 o'clock in the morning, he discovered her body, and he said that she was quite literally frozen solid, and she was white as a ghost. So he called the ambulance. She was immediately admitted, taken to the hospital. Now, first of all, I would think that if they show up and you're as hard as a rock, they might pronounce you. But they then took her there, and doctors assessed her, and when she arrived, she was so cold that normal thermometers were failing to even register a reading. They estimated her temperature had fallen below 30 degrees Celsius, and her heart rate had sunk to under 12 beats a minute. They couldn't even insert a needle to aggressively heat her up, her body, giving her warming back through her veins, because she was too frozen solid. So instead, they decided to wrap her in a thermal blanket, and they simply just slowly started heating it up, and they started thawing her out, just like you would a piece of meat. And 12 hours later, something astonishing happened. They were able to actually, they could actually hear a very faint heartbeat, which is why they started to try to defrost her and all of this. And 12 hours later, she actually regained consciousness and asked for a glass of water. Now, the same evening, she had regained control of her hands and arms, and after 3 days, she was able to walk again. After less than a week of an intensive care unit, she was discharged from the hospital, and the doctor said they couldn't find any evidence whatsoever that her brush with death caused her any long-term internal or external damage. Now, nobody can explain how this happened. We know that it is absolutely a real case, 100%. People have talked to the doctors and all of that. But yeah, she was frozen completely solid.
And that
maybe cryogenics does have something to.
She's fully functional. Everything's fine with her. Not even brain damage. No frostbite. That, you know, because in most cases, you know, when it's that severe, you end up having to amputate it. But
right.
No, she's fully functional, perfectly fine. I don't know. That's a miracle in itself. That I can just say that is totally straight up miracle right there. You know, so
absolutely. And I mean, to walk away, like you said, with no residual effects at all. I mean, just imagine. So you're driving, because she probably would have succumbed. And she probably wouldn't have made it if she would have stayed in her car. I think the fact that it was so cold that it froze her so quickly that it did all that before it had a chance maybe to give her frostbite or any of those things.
Yeah.
But
like,
again, it's a
flash frozen
miracle. Exactly. And it's kind of where, when I think of like cryogenics and things like that, where they will deep freeze your body until they can find, you know, a cure or whatever is going on in your body. I mean, but to imagine to be frozen solid, but yet you still have a heartbeat. Like, to me, that is the medical part of this is just so freaking amazing. How in the world could you be frozen solid and still have a heartbeat? And all they did was just wrap her up in a thermal blanket and slowly over 12 hours let her fall out.
Yeah. That just really blows my mind. That's just definitely a miracle, medical miracle, as they would call it.
They were saying it's freaking cold in Minnesota, and it sure is. And so maybe you're right. I mean, Renee, maybe it is like a flash frozen thing, because
yeah.
Obviously, she wasn't too far from where she was already headed when the car broke down. And, I mean, she was able to make it far enough from her car to make it 16 feet away from the front door step of her friend's house.
It must have had to have been really, you know, with the snow and everything, and probably, you know, if it was, you know, even windy enough and everything with the, you know, sub-temperatures and everything, I could see that actually happening.
Yeah, in chat they're saying maybe reptile, maybe hibernation. I mean, I don't know many humans that hibernate, but I mean, it's when I think of something like that, that's almost what it sounds like. I mean, where they're able to slow the breathing and the heartbeat down enough where it'll still, but again, I mean, to be frozen absolutely completely solid. They couldn't get a needle in, they couldn't, none of that.
There's nothing, yeah.
So you would think that it would make you into a block of ice, you would think that it would go all the way through and it would have frozen our organs too, our heart and everything as well.
Yeah.
And again, there's, I can't, you know, the, where it's always different. You never know. So things like this come up.
Put me out there, I'd probably be totally frozen, unable to bring me back. I'm, just go ahead and put me in the freezer.
Yeah, with my luck, I have, like, frosted everywhere, like I'd start decomposing, like, and then I would probably, a bunch of gas would build up and I would explode and there would be pieces of me everywhere instead of...
Well, that depends what you ate the night before, you know?
How about some beans, Mexican food?
You ate at Taco Bell. Well, everybody explodes from Taco Bell, so I guess that's possible. That's a quick plug for Taco Bell. How about that?
No. You want to be my sponsor? This year, they'll be our new sponsor, Taco Bell, for the people who like gas. All right. So here's another one that is interesting. So the geoglyphs are now being studied from space out in Kazakhstan. And now we know that there are many geoglyphs. The most well-known are the Nazca lines.
Right.
Of course. But these are a little bit different, and they, let me pull up the...
Okay, it's in the chat now. There we go.
All right. So the geoglyphs are large designs, usually longer than 4 meters, constructed on the ground and typically formed by rocks or similar materials, and they can only be seen from... high above. Intriguingly, they can be only seen from the air or great heights. The most famous geoglyphs are the Nazca lines in Peru, and despite many different hypotheses, the purpose of these glyphs are still completely remain unclear. Nazca scientists found that one group of these geoglyphs are so interesting that they decided to study it from space. The space agency officially investigated the Stepi geoglyphs, a group of more than 200 giant squares, lines, rings, and a swastika that are formed by dirt mounds in the Turgoy area of North Kazakhstan. Thought it to have been made by the Madagascar culture, these geoglyphs are estimated to be between 6 and 9,000 years old. One of the mounds was dated to around 800 BC using optical dating. Shrouded in mystery, the knowledge of why they were constructed, lost in the mist of time, it captivates and fascinates us. Now, again, it's very interesting of how these geographical shapes, these squares, the circles, all of these things. Now, if you were, just like with the Nazca lines, if you've ever watched a documentary, when you're walking around, you would never be able to tell what you're walking around in.
Right.
You would have no way to know that that's what you're walking around. But go from an airplane and look down, oh, you can see them very clearly. Now, it's been rumored that, you know, these were created and when the aliens would, you know, come from others, it would be like landing zones or things that they would know, they could identify where they were at or things like that.
Right.
But it's always interesting how they can make these, I mean, huge geographical, you know, structures put out.
And according to...
You see it from above.
Right, you know, considering that, well, didn't have aircraft that time, so how can we measure
right.
the distance and when to make, you know, make the, you know, if they're trying to make a picture of some sort or, you know, to create different angles and everything, how do you know if you don't see it from above? So, again, that's another big thing, too, because even in China, there's a bunch of them out there, which I found through... Google Earth and myself, and I took some screenshots of those, and it was like, it just totally made me, because you can never tell until you're way above.
Yeah, so it's pretty, and some of these, you know, geoglyphs are, you know, hundreds of miles across.
Mm-hmm.
So again, how do you create something like that and get it in the perfect placement so it makes these shapes from above? Because we have everything from, you know, like what looks like flying birds to all different kinds of things. Now, these are squares and, you know, the swastika I mean, how in the world do you make a swastika that huge that it can be seen from space?
Right. And that's the thing, too. You know, and on top of that, you know, being, you know, you're making a straight line, you know, you look at it from the air, and you know, they're pretty precise where they cross and everything, where they meet up. When that, you know, you're looking at it from above, but then when you go to ground level, you know, you're on uneven ground, you know, hills and mountains and things or whatever, it's in the way. You know, it looks all, you know, crooked. How in the world do you create the straight line when you have to go through such uneven ground? You know,
exactly.
To be precise.
Exactly.
So
again, how are you able to make that, say again, like a swastika or these different things, and make it in perfect size and shape, and you know, again, it just, it seems impossible, but obviously we have them, so we know that it's not impossible.
Right. And like I said, there's plenty of other ones. There's plenty of others, you know, like I said, worldwide, you know, as well as in China, you know, and of course the Nazca lines, and there's so many places, you know, you'd be surprised. You know, I you know, suggest that people just go on Google Earth and just kind of scan over an open area, which apparently looks, you know, desolate, and you kind of zoom in a little bit, but then you start to see different, you know, geometric shapes of some kind, and just kind of look at these areas and it's like, wait a minute, that's not artificial, that looks man-made. You just kind of look at these things and just kind of explore it, and put a pin it and mark it on your Google Earth, all the things you find. You'd be surprised what you might find. You know, some we might have overlooked, you know, since Google Earth always needs to, you know, do its updating and so forth. But you're bound to find something if you just kind of scan over it, take a little time, just kind of relax and kind of do a little scan using your Google Earth. And you'd be surprised what you would actually find.
Well, Lisa from Twitter is asking, Renee, who do you think created these? Do you think it was humans or do you think it was some alien beings?
I think they always had, you know, an influence on it. There are a lot of things that were created when they were here, and of course, even when they left, they did it kind of like an homage kind of thing. They wanted to come back kind of thing. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it was kind of humorous to say it this way, but putting the bat signal up and they will come kind of thing. So I think it's a big connection to extraterrestrials, and, you know, people want that connection because, you know, they miss them because some had been away for a while.
I agree. That's kind of my thought on it as well.
Yeah.
We've got another one. Let's see. Next on the thing. So let's talk about the hidden room behind Lincoln's head in Mount Rushmore. Now, did you know about this room, Renee?
I did not know about that room.
I did not either. Some people that I talked to today did know about it. Some people did not know about it. I myself had never heard about it, but it was interesting when I pulled it up and read about it. So let me...
Okay, I'm going to post it onto the... Here.
And people will be able to follow along, and it'll show where the actual door is. And you can, you know, pull the coordinates up on, like Renee said, on Google Earth. I mean, he loves Google Earth. He's on it all the time. But perfect place to research for stuff like this. So let me come on, computer. All right, recently a hidden room was brought to light on Mount Rushmore behind the head of Abraham Lincoln by the movie National Treasure 2, Book of Secrets. Now, the monument sculptor, Guggen Borglum, initially planned to build a hidden room called the Hall of Records, the purpose of which was to chronicle the history of the United States. Unfortunately, he died before being able to complete the room. It would have been 80 feet by 100 feet with access by an 800-foot granite staircase. The Hall of Records was supposed to contain items such as the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, with the addition of sculptures of famous Americans. The purpose of the Hall of Records was to serve as a time capsule for future civilizations. Without the Hall of Records, he said, you might as well drop a letter into the World Postal Service without an address or signature, and to send that carved mountain into history without identification. After the four presidents' heads had been completed, the rock behind the head was drilled into. However, the project was halted when he died in 1941, and it was revived back in 1998. Although the Hall is not what he had envisioned, the work has been done to further that goal, and today the Hall of Records contains porcelain enamel sculptures of documents important to American history. Another item was a teak wood box that contains a biography of Borglum himself and the presidents that are locked into titanium vault. All of these are locked into a 1,200-pound granite capstone. Tourists are unable to access the Hall of Records since it's out of reach. The Hall of Records is featured in the movie National Treasures 2, Book of Secrets. The movie used aerial shots of the exterior, but the interior was built on a set design, obviously. Now, it's interesting that all my life that I've known about Mount Rushmore, never, ever knew anything about this place or what it was created for.
I think I've heard of stuff about it, but I'd never really, you know, took the interest to really look at it, you know, thinking that it was just, you know, a hearsay kind of thing, but I never really researched it. But this is it. It proved me wrong. It really was there. So that's interesting.
It's interesting.
Though.
I mean,
yeah.
With everything that we have, why would we really need to have that, the Hall of Records up there of all places? And then they put, you know, the 8-ton capstone on, so how would anybody able in the future be able to access it?
You know, maybe it's, I don't know, when people might think, you know, if something was to happen to civilization, that would be kind of set of record of history or whatever. I don't know. It's interesting that they've had that, though.
Yeah, it's kind of hidden out of sight because if you were to, it's kind of along the back side, so when you look at the one picture, you're able to see it real clearly, but I can't even imagine without the movie coming out, most people probably still wouldn't know about any of this.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of one of the things you have to, you're going to have to, you know, pull your Indiana Jones out and figure how to get up there in the first place because it's, I'm guaranteed it's probably not someone that you would just find off a map just to get there.
Hmm. Well, they're saying they were supposed to have 800 stairs. I mean, could you granite stairs? Could you imagine having to get to the top of that?
Who needs a stairmaster?
Only to find out you can't get in.
Yeah. Anybody got the key? Yeah, I left it at the office.
Yeah. Yeah, and hopefully, you know, if something bad, you know, was happening, wipe out civilization or, you know, or something. Hopefully they had some dynamite or something to be able to access it because otherwise nobody would know what's there either. I mean, how are they going to know that there happens to be a secret room in the back of the head? So I don't know. I don't think it was a very well thought out plan, to be honest, but I guess.
Yeah, who would have thought they having a door behind your head? sorry, one of our forefathers just happened to have a door in back of his head, so that just
okay. Yeah, don't pay no mind.
Yeah. Pay no mind because he's always closed. Anyway, that's a bad joke. I know.
All right, so we got another one. So there was a picture of a UFO landing on a U.S. Navy ship. And for a long time, it was held in question if this was a hoax, photoshopped, something like that. And it has been deemed genuine. Let me pull this one up.
Well, that's not the first time that the military had face-to-face contacts with an alien craft.
Well, one, yeah, this is an alleged photo of a flying saucer landing on the flight deck of an aircraft carrier is genuine, according to William Tompkins, a retired aerospace engineer who had a four-decade career with the leading U.S. corporations up until 1984. William Tompkins reveals a pact between the American military and the Nordic aliens that this pact lasts from World War II, when the North American aliens allied with the American military to defeat the reptilian aliens who aided the Nazis. He also told us that while working on the secret project of building a space fleet, he worked at that time with two female aliens who advised him on spacecraft projects. As for the photo of the ship placed in the port, he assures it is true and represents a ship of the Nordic aliens who came to fetch the admiral of the fleet for a meeting in a ship of the Nordic aliens. Now, all right, well, first of all, what's your thoughts on this, Renee?
Well, I know they've had it, you know, they're dealing with them for quite some time. Yeah, that, if they're dealing with the reptilian, you know, with the Nazis, to be honest, it sounds like they were dealing with my uncle back at that time. Yeah, I think it's probable. Of course, you know, when you're looking at the photo that's on there, you know, there's a video that goes with it. So if you guys want to look
right.
at that.
Yeah, and, don't look at just the picture, because I think the picture is like of a current aircraft or with a UFO over the top of it, which is the actual one. But I absolutely think that, you know, there are pictures out there, because we've seen plenty of them, you know, that have come from a long time ago. And, I mean, what would be the, most of the time, these pictures were taken by the military and then somehow leaked or whatever. So what would be the point of military taking pictures if it wasn't, if that wasn't the case?
Right.
Especially
something that official. I mean, you know, when we talk about, you know, the Roswell crash, I mean, the news got out briefly, but then they tried to cover it up really, really swiftly. Not a very good job at it, but they still got it to work. You know, because they wanted to keep things, especially if they're that kind of connection with military, they want to make sure that always kept under wraps. You know, so the whole thing with the, you know, same thing with Area 51 and Wright-Patterson. They will not talk about it. You know, people will hear things, and of course all the hearsays and all these other things saying that it is, but they denied it all the way. And of course not until years later when it, you know, with the Information Act went into play, and of course things started coming out more. But, you know, for that time, that was just, they would definitely keep anything hush hush, especially when they're talking about having any kind of communications with any kind of extraterrestrial, good or bad.
Well, I mean, it makes sense, you know, that if they were going to, you know, have meetings, if they were working with aliens and the military out in the seas, I mean, it'd be a perfect place to do it, because who's going to be out there monitoring you?
Right.
Nobody. So I could see where it possibly could, you know, happen. But, and we've seen, you know, pictures of USOs coming out of the water, going into the water, and we've seen, you know, plenty of those kind of things. So I definitely think that it's a possibility. And with all the top secret thing. Look at all of the top secret projects that, you know, now 40, 50 years later, we're just now getting confirmation that, oh, yes, these are real things. You know,
like the TR-3.
All the different ones. I mean,
you got the TR-3.
You don't deny it anymore, and then, oh, okay, all right, we'll go ahead and give it to you. It's real. Duh.
Yeah. You know, it was funny, there's this miniseries, I think some of you might have heard of it, from Steven Spielberg's Taken. It was really well done. And when they were at the base, when they were walking, and what aircraft happened to fly by. It was the stealth fighter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's like, oh, how can you deny it now? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And so when you got to really look at the history of, you know, when we had these old prop planes and, you know, during World War II, you know, bombings and doing your old dogfights, and then you take a few more years gone by, now we got jet fighters, and then we got, you know, atomic power and nuclear bombs in such a short time period.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many planes have we tested and decided to go against not using? But yet we never even knew those planes existed.
Right.
At least most of us, unless you're in the military, you know, responsible for testing these planes, you would never even know that they were created.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how top secret this stuff is, and it stays that way. I mean, it's crazy when you look at all the different spy planes that we've had over the years. And now that, again, we're 50 years out, now they'll say, okay, now we'll release all the different ones we've had. But people were, you know, none the wiser of what was going on right around
them. Mm-hmm. And that goes, you know, even with the, you know, we talk about Area 51 quite a bit, and I always pay attention to everything that goes on there, and I, you know, study it really closely. And each division, you know, you could be a contractor for a special project that they're working on, you know, whether it's a new aircraft, a new weapon, you know, something that's experimental. You got these walls. You can travel on the ground driving in your vehicle in blacked out buses, and you're driving around, and they got these walls in various departments, so you don't know what the other department is doing. They're doing something totally
right.
Different than what you're doing. Because they want
it compartmentalized.
It is very much so. So that doesn't this doesn't surprise me at all when they have this kind of a alien connection.
Well, just like look at when we were talking back before about the Walmart closing, and people were going in. Even people that were going in there, they were working. They were going in to do a specific job, and they left. They weren't allowed in any other areas. They had partitions up that people couldn't see. You would go in and do your job and leave, and you were never supposed to go outside of your area, or you would be fired immediately. You also had to sign on disclosures and, you know, top secret, you know, stuff. So, again, so many things can happen and be taking place right under our noses, and even the people involved don't always know. It's on a complete need-to-know basis. Actually, Holly from Twitter is asking, you, Renee, when you talk about Area 51, do you think that it's still in working status, or do you think that they've moved it at this point since there's been so much popularity?
It still is. It still is, even though, because right now they got, you know, additional, you know, building going on there, as well as underneath, as well as the tunnels that are coming through California, heading toward Vegas and so forth. Also, Fresno, also down in Southern California as well, and heading east. Everything was heading east, and also Area 51 is connected to it. So they can travel. They all connect now to where they want to go. So, yes, it's
so
still
why would
pretty
you
accurate.
Get rid of it? Like a main hub, I would think.
Yeah, it is. And so, yeah, they can say, well, that thing is, you know, not here, you know, what you guys are saying. You know, they can do it in a way that, and, well, they're not lying. They probably moved it underneath somewhere along the railways. So they'll connect, but yes, it is still being used.
All right, there you go, Holly. And I completely agree with that. I mean, with all the money that they've put into this place, why would they not use it? I mean, there's no way in the world you're going to get anywhere close to that place. And we see some videos of people who have tried to inadvertently cross, they are not playing with people. So, you know,
I came close.
That way, why wouldn't
I came close at the time when I was with my ex at the time we got married, and that was our honeymoon trip. We went down to Rachel, and of course we decided to take that trip along that dirt road, and went to the sign and everything. We see the camo dude sitting up there on the hill, And of course, we decided to play with him a little bit, that we kind of did this little hide and seek with him, hiding behind the hill. And then we popped out of the hill, and then we back around the hill again. Next, you know what? They're facing the other direction where we were on the other side. So by the time we left and we started looking in the rearview mirror, there comes a little dust cloud falling behind us, like, oh crap. So they followed us all the way back to Little Alien. We went in there and kind of sat down, going to have something to eat. And the owner looks out the window. What are they doing here? And I kind of looked out there and I said, they never come down here unless they're looking for somebody. And sure enough, there was a couple of dudes in there in their Bronco. And I'm going, and the lady looked at us, what you all do? All we did was look up there.
Well, yeah, I mean, but you would think, though, I mean, that's where you've lost your mind, because after your own experience with at Area 51 to, and the way you ended up leaving that place, then to want to go and play chicken with the
same
people, of course, not a real smart idea.
Well, she was driving at the time. You know, I was a passenger. And,
oh, blame it on her. Okay.
Well, she was driving. You know, she wasn't, you know, hey, watch this. And so, and then they're laughing, right, you know. And, but by the time we got back and everything, and of course it was no longer funny. It was like, oh, crap. And so they left. And so we, you know, after we finished eating, the coast was clear, then we go and park behind the trailer where we're staying in. And so they come back, and they drove around the complex area, and then they see that our car is parked there. And it's like, holy crap, they're out there again. And then they drove off. So they knew that we were staying there. And then days later, we had some unusual phone calls. Everything on our phones were always tapped at home, so everything just kind of followed us home. And that went on for a few years. Just interesting harassment. Like, couldn't even talk to anybody without that sound that we would actually hear, that somebody's listening on the other end. Like, so they were watching this for a good period of time there. So it was every time we go visit those areas, we never went down that road anymore. We just kind of like, let's enjoy the stars and just kind of relax. So
yeah, well, we're talking about going there this summer. So yeah, we're just the FYI, Renee.
What?
About to stick you in the trunk. You are not going to go and play chicken with Garth.
Ah, I'm gonna keep my nose clean in that area. You know, Ellie.
Probably got your most wanted on the on there in their little vibe that they put down. You see this guy, get him.
Come pick him up. Oh, great. Well, if they come and get me, at least I get my old room back. No.
I don't think you want that room, Renee. It's working out for you if you really, really want.
Yeah, probably
they
not.
They just push you up the street, pass the road, and take off and leave you there. No.
Oh, wow. It's like that, huh?
I'll remote view and see what's going on from that point.
It would be kind of hard for me to do the show from there, though.
I'll just do a psychic reading. Telepathically, I'll be chiming in with you.
Right.
Behind the walls of Area 51. Wouldn't that be an interesting...
Well, that'd be interesting.
Show, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how... That'd be interesting for us on this side. I don't know how interesting it'd be for you on the other side.
Yeah, since they'll be monitoring me. And they probably figured, hey, you escaped here before. You're not getting out this time. They upgraded.
Nope, you didn't make sure of it. Yeah, make sure of it this time.
You know, after so many years, you would think they would upgrade. So that's... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they have at this point. Boy, with all the answers out there and now the detention people, you can't get nowhere. I mean, the thing is that even when people get past that, you know, those areas, Area 51 is still so far still away from any of those areas, so that they're going to catch you way before you even get a chance. And even if you were to get past the, and they've got ammonia readers, they've got everything in the world possible that you could think of technologically to detect people.
For real, because they got monitors, man, they could detect you farting in the middle of the desert. So, you know, don't even try it.
Yeah, they can detect breath and people breathing or anything. I mean, but again, it's like they tell you, oh, there's nothing there. We're not doing anything there. But you need that kind of technology.
Right.
That kind of technology just to
keep the
desert secure, I guess.
That's what gets people fooled, you know. Well, it's just, you know, base, you know. I know a lot of bases, even around our area. Do they have razor wire fences around there? Of course they do. It's a base. But over there, they don't need it because they got things that can pick you up really easy. And
yeah, they don't even have any gates.
No gate. No need to, because they know exactly where you are.
It is completely open. It's just, you know, just signs saying don't cross this barrier, you know, this point, or you will be shot and killed.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not playing with that. So,
Yeah,
I mean, that kind of technology, you know, for and security for nothing, come on, give me a break.
You know, they let you know that, you know, you're in the desert. Bad things can happen in the desert.
And that's very true. I mean, you can disappear and never come back from the desert, and nobody would know be any the wiser. That's why I always think it's kind of crazy when people go and decide that they're going to do this kind of stuff and don't tell anybody where they're going.
Right.
Not that you could do anything. I mean, it's like I had super friends that were going to go up there one time, and they were going to try to push the envelope and cross over. And I was like, don't be stupid. Don't even be stupid. You don't want to do that. Like, we've seen so many videos of stupid people going past there, you know, families with children, and you remember we had Jeremiah on the show.
Right.
Him and his son had spoken to some people that didn't speak English. They were tourists, and they were following him and his son up to the gates, and he had said, when you get to the gates, you know, we have to stop. And he stopped, and they just kept going, and they just kept driving and driving and driving, and they were met by the camo guys, and they were pulled out by gunpoint. And as Jeremiah and his son just looked on, you know, there wasn't anything they could do. And, you know, we still don't have any idea what happened to these people.
And you know, and that's the thing, because even when I was with my wife, when we did the little back-and-forth thing, we did not cross that line. So even if we didn't cross that line, they still came. So, you know, that shows how serious the matter is. You can imagine what it would have done when we did cross the line. I didn't even want to find that out. So, you know, it's just, it was a very surreal experience. And like I said, we've been there years later. Every time we go to Laughlin, we always stopped there and stayed a few days there. But didn't tempt ourselves again because of all the things that happened afterwards. You know, it's like, well, we're not playing with those guys anymore. We're just going to enjoy a little time, a little vacation here, and not go bug them.
Yeah, that shocked me, you know, to see the people that you go past there. I mean, these stories are just crazy, to be honest. It looks like we have about 8 minutes left, so we'll go over one more article, and then we're going to do an episode of Fact or Fake. We've got two videos tonight to go over. So the last article we're going to go over is RoboBees. Now, again, this is something
this is crazy.
Sci-fi, I'm telling you. So, and I want to give credit to Kelly Valdez, our longtime listener. He sent this to me earlier tonight and tagged me in it, and says, in an example of life imitating art, scientists have come up with a technology straight out of an episode of Black Mirror, bee-like pollinating drones. A team of the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan engineered the devices using a combination of horsehair, $100 drones, and a sticky ion gel. Pretty simple, really. First, the drones fly into the flowers, much like a bee would. Inside the flower, pollen gets stuck to the drone due to the combination of the ion gel and the horsehair. The same pollen is then shaken off onto the next flower and so on. So it's just like your run-of-the-mill birds and robot bees. Popular Mechanic reported that Elijah Macayo is a chemist at the AIST, actually created the sticky ion gel by accident in 2007. The gel, which he said he considered a failure at first, sat in use for a decade. When he picked it up again, he was pleased to find that it was still sticky and figured it would be perfect for his new project. Now, again, with the mass die-off of the bees, I guess this is a way to still pollinate things, but is taking everything and making it technologically adapted a good thing? You know, me per se, I don't know that it is.
I don't think so. I mean,
when we start, hoping that the robot bees will pollinate everything, you know,
can you get stung by a robot bee? Just saying.
Maybe, I don't know. It looks pretty darn interesting, to say the least. I mean, the way that they have them. So.
You got the link in there, guys. Right there. So.
If you start out there, like, where does it go from there is the thing.
Well, same direction that we've been talking about, you know, putting our minds downloaded to an Android, you know. We're creating all these other robots who resemble certain other creatures as well, hummingbirds and all these other devices that they got out there now. So what are they trying to do? You know, once we're all gone, at least all the mechanical ones are still running?
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's go to our fact of fate. So we've got our first one. And the first one was thanks to Renee. He supplied it for us, and it is a supposed video of a person. Well, Renee, we only got about 3 minutes, but you can explain it.
Okay. Yeah, it is basically a person was walking, they were having their flashlight, so apparently they spotted a structure or a craft of some sort, and so they're taking all these, having the video in one hand and then having the, you know, the flashlight in the other.
Flashlight.
It seemed like their flashlight, and so they're both, you know, wandering around, and it seemed like there was more than one. And then you get glimpse what looked like a gray, real briefly, and then they sweep the flashlight again, and it's not there. There's kind of a whole back and forth thing, and then when they get close enough, the person gets attacked by this gray, you see the full face and everything, and so I'm gonna see if I can get that in there for you guys, because it's. You know, let you all decide. Is it real?
Yeah, again, to me, just the common sense side of me says this is fake. We'll let everybody be the decision. I'm going to post this up on the page and make sure that you go to our radio show Facebook page and comment on it. Let us know what you think. And then we've got one other one. You want to post that one up, Renee?
Okay.
It's the orb one.
Hello, Orby. Okay.
Just pull it up. And this is this giant, like, mirrored orb ball shows up in a field. And it kind of materializes. It's blurry. It materializes. You can hear the cows mooing, they zoom in on it, you can kind of see what seems to be a reflection or something, and then it collapses inside itself and takes off. Again, I'm thinking that this is another Photoshop hoax. That's just my opinion. What about you, Renee?
I think it's a hoax. Because even with the surrounding around this orb and everything, along with the background, it was
like a good one.
It was bad. feels bad.
All right, guys. Well, we are at the end of the show. We want to thank you so much for joining us. Everybody who's listening, I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to join us next week. We are going to have Preston Dennett here. He's going to be talking about contacts, so you don't want to miss that one. And check also out my show, Paranormal Connections, Monday night. Again, we will see everybody next week. Have a great week, everyone. Good night.
Hasta la vista.
Baby.
Well, thank you.
Y'all clear for you.
What a way to end it, huh?
I get out of here so I can get these next crazies on here.